Wednesday, May the 1st. In spite of wanting so much to sleep late, I was awake at 7. I must have reached some sort of an end, because I was strained, snappish, very tired. I look at my desk piled high with pictures to be autographed, and growl at sweet little Marilyn, who retreats in astonishment, and on the other side of the desk there are memos, things to act upon, requests for appointments, nearly all of which I want to do, some already discussed with the staff, some initiated by me. But I look at the whole mass and feel like I'm barefoot and exhausted at the base of a tall mountain getting ready for the climb. I call Clark Clifford and reported the White House Historical Association's reaction to the portrait, and that I did not want to phone Madame Shimatov to set up dates for her to begin sittings with Lyndon until he had a clear understanding with her, first over the phone and then to be followed in writing. I promised to do it very soon. I talked to Doug Hubbard and asked him if he could come over about 2:30 so we could have a little prior meeting about the park across from the house. I talked to Liz, who has some plans for writing herself when all this is over. I spoke to her of the possibility of getting a good many of my tapes transcribed and described what an ordeal of editing it would be. I have a million words where a thousand might be useful someday. Mr. Pear came and gave me a comb out, and about 10 o'clock I began the filming. And this was my very own plan. A tour of my favorite rooms on the second floor, the living quarters, and those that had played a part in my life here. We began in the treaty room. Timon, a crew of three or four. Jim Ketchum standing by for historical details. And then Mr. Phillips, who had been sent to us from the University of Texas on loan from their communications department. From DeWitt Reddick through Liz, I believe, to help us fill in the gaps, the lacunae, shall I say, in the picture of this administration. That is, the picture as recorded quite literally in photographs and film. The mix is about one part history to establish the room, and about three parts my personal reminiscences. The meeting chair on beautification, interviews, finding Linda studying here in our first days, the laboratory for the bringing into being of the Lyndon Johnson Library, my own fond description of it as my board of directors room, and then my funny story about President Zachary Taylor and Mr. Smithson, told me by Mr. Rothschild when he was visiting. There were the takes over and over. Somebody was using a vacuum cleaner. The noise came through. Downstairs, there was a ceremony, and Lyndon was giving the Medal of Honor. The Marine band vibrated through the house. Amazingly, the noise did not come through. We worked for over 3 hours. I felt that I was a little forced and pedantic rather than the loving, spontaneous quality I wanted. But we finished the room. No matter how tired you feel sustained when you're in the middle of something like this, by the goal of completion. And after 1:30, I went down to the theater to see the at long last completed movie of Crossroads USA, my trip last September through 5 Midwestern states. It had been the most arduous and perhaps the least thrilling of the trips. The movie was rather a disappointment. Great shots, but the script did not tell the story I wanted to tell, which made, in retrospect, it all the more wise that we had taken along the scriptwriter as we went on the Crossing the Trails of Texas, April the 5th to 9th. If you haven't lived it, how can you write it? I had a sandwich and a salad on my lap while I watched the movie. It was not a moment to waste. And back upstairs, I worked at my desk and with Liz, and then to the West Hall to meet with Doug Hubbard. I am completely in the dark as to whether Lawrence Rockefeller proposes to do the plan for the Johnson Park across from our house through the National Park Service, or whether to do any portion of the exhibits themselves. I found that Doug Hubbard was not clear himself. Plan, yes, certainly, and work was progressing on it. As for any further work on exhibits themselves, he would ask Connie Worth. But clearly, Doug Hubbard is interested, excited, and knowledgeable about the whole thing. And I feel better than I ever have that this little park may come to be a point of interest that we can be proud of. So at 3, we had another meeting in my board of directors room. Its object, the crystallization, selection, and drawing together of plans for the Johnson Park. Roy White, the architect of the Visitor Center, and Joe France, the historian, Connie Worth, father advisor, and link with Lawrence Rockefeller, Bart Gosden, head of the Texas Park Service, and Nancy Cott, its total exhibit staff, and I found her delightful, and Doug Hubbard, Russell Hendrickson, and another member of the National Park Service. This time, I had a recorder present. We had iced tea and coffee and cookies already in. Everybody helped themselves, and we shut the door and got down to work. And 2 hours passed like 20 minutes, just as they had this morning on another project. I was proud that the Texas Park Service had made considerable headway. Nancy had drawn a plan for furnishing a little log cabin, circa 1850 to 70, listed all the items. The National Park Service seemed as impressed as I was. We decided to give the list to the heads of the neighboring historical associations, especially Mr. Tyrus Cox of Gillespie County and Mr. Waltz of Blanco County, and to the regional historical association, which is called, delightfully, the Edwards Plateau Historical Association, and is already met and offered to help. I believe it was Russell Hendrickson who had some interesting drawings of little islands of exhibit. For instance, the cattle industry, so much a part of that region, would be represented by an old and worn saddle, a lariat, a branding iron, a beat-up coffee pot, against perhaps the background of a blown-up photograph of a chuck wagon somewhere on a plain. We discussed the two walls of glass, one facing north toward the ranch, the other south toward the highway, and decided that we might have some sort of panels that would fold back on the south walls so that they could become, if necessary, exhibit areas. The Austin contingent is to stay over a couple of more days and go to the laboratory of the National Park Service and get all the help they can on exhibit ideas. This is a sort of a seminar for them. And my role is just something of catalyst, I hope. I grope in so many things in the dark without being a knowledgeable specialist in anything. At any rate, I was excited and buoyed up by the 2 hours and hopeful when I left them a little past five and fell into the bed where I nevertheless worked with Ashton, signing mail, making phone calls, and at 7 o'clock went in for my last appointment of the day. James McGregor Burns had brought over the, I think it's called, galley proofs of his book, which is really an editing job with the foreword written by him and a series of people who did essays selected by him, the whole thing designed to give a picture of this administration. He gave me a copy, and I noticed that some of those doing the essays were Howard K. Smith and Ralph Ellison and Chester Bowles, and to my great pleasure, Mac George Bundy. He's a spare, noncommittal, very professorial man, and I had the sense, guarding his honor carefully, as a free writer, lest I try to influence him. He asked me a number of questions about my own operation, why I do not really know, because this book is finished and I do not know of another that he's writing. What was the work of a first lady like? How many people did I have working in the beautification office, in Liz's office? What did Bess do? But not the sort of questions that got at the meat of the matter, it seemed to me. And I, though I regard him with respect, and would really like him to understand what this is and what it can be, this particular nick I occupy, simply did not have enough energy left to paint the word picture it deserves. So I answered him very simply and briefly on the bones of the setup. And he left about 7:40, and to my amazement, Lyndon came home a little before 8. An early hour for him. We sat in the West Hall while he telephoned, and I read, and then we had dinner and a rub and went to bed at a blessedly early hour. For Lyndon, the day must have had some sense of lift. The headlines were, Tax Impasse Apparently Broken, Mahon Panel and House OK's Spending Cuts, but that's a long way from finished.